not war after the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. As you see, this is the second letter that Paul had written to the Corinthian congregation. He was instrumental in that congregation being established. He had a lot of folks there with confidence in him. But there had been some interferences. There was, he had to write a letter and correct them about some things. And apparently, among the other things, there were those who opposed him there, were teaching other doctrines. And so Paul is addressing that in his comments here. Weapons of our warfare are not carnal. But I brought that out just to set a little bit of the backdrop, because I have a mind to take this scripture in an entirely different direction this morning, and I don't want you to feel like that I'm wresting it from its place. I don't suppose when Paul wrote this he had any idea that people would still be reading it 2,000 years later. But it fits our time. The principles that are in it fit every generation, every culture, every nation. So I'm thinking about, as maybe we all are, the season, time of year that it is. And don't try not to make too much of a practice, because I'm afraid it'll bore you, bringing my personal life into my efforts up here. I'll make an exception this morning and tell you about the adventures that I've been having a little bit. I got a call for some of the work that I do, and so Friday I flew to Rhode Island and back again yesterday. And that's not unusual for me, things of that sort. But it's Christmas time, a lot of people in the airports, things going on. Stopped to have dinner in Baltimore. The plane landed there and had a little time. And there was a young man sitting by himself at a table next to me. I had my back to him, and he was to my right and behind me. But he struck up a conversation. Even though I wasn't facing him, he struck up a conversation. So I asked what he's doing. He's on his way home, lived in Arkansas, flying the Little Rock. He's a sailor. So, well, what's ahead of you? Well, he said, I'm learning submarine warfare. He said, my brother's in the submarines. He said he hadn't been able to tell me where he is, just that he's somewhere in the North Atlantic and other oceans like that. But he said, I know pretty well he's off the coast of Iran, because Iran's doing some saber rattling, you know. They've got nuclear plants that they're building and things like that. And submarines have been called the silent service, because nobody knows much about where they are or what they do. They're something that's very concealed. I had a friend who was in the submarine service. He told me we submerged within sight of Seattle and sailed around the world. And when we next broke the surface, we were within sight of Seattle again. It's all the way around the globe underwater. And that's the silent service. And he said, you know, those fellows are talking about nuclear threat and so forth over there. He said, I'm sure that our government has notified the North Koreans and probably also the people in Iran. There's enough firepower gathered around you that if you started anything, your nation would be obliterated, because our nuclear arsenal is that great. So after I had my conversation with him and listened to, you know, we spent an hour or so, and I listened to him and went away and thought about it. The reason people do that is, well, Pearl Harbor. We talked about Pearl Harbor a little bit. He said, I've stood on the submarines that are there, and I stood over the arch where the memorial to the Arizona is. and said, those were humans, those were people just like you and I are, and they were caught off guard. And it was a terrible, terrible day. Some of them are still down inside that ship. Some of them were burned to death. All of them had families. All of them were people. I've been there too, and it's a lot more solemn to stand there than it is just to tell a story of it. And the reason it hurts so bad is because of the relationships we have with each other, what we mean to each other. That's why that we have this nuclear shield. It's because once our people were attacked unexpectedly, and it was so terrible, it was so painful, that we almost spare no expense we send our best and our brightest to protect us from ever having such a thing happen again. Because when fathers and mothers have to grieve over a son or a daughter who lost her life by the effect of a foreign power, leaves a home, leaves an empty place at the kitchen table, it leaves a hole in people's hearts, nothing else ever quite fills. That's why. There's good reason. But you know, we're not unique. People all over the world love each other the same way. It's just that we can't protect the whole world. So our military protects the United States first. Then on the flight, back home, about 2.5 hour flight from Baltimore to Kansas City, there was a young lady in the seat straight behind me. And she had about maybe a year old little girl in her arms and kicked the back of my seat the whole way home. But I didn't mind it. I really didn't mind it because I knew what they were doing. I could hear her laughing and playing. She never cried the whole time. And her mother would point out things out the window and talk about going to Grandma's house, going to see the snow. It was snowing when we landed in Kansas City last night. Look out the window. See, Susie, see the snowflakes flying by the side of the airplane. And with the landing lights on, it looked, there were just a blur of snow going by. She could see that. She could see the lights. Look, there's a city down there. That's a big city we're flying over. Just everything she could point out to her, trying to keep her distracted. But how can I say this? There is a tone in a mother's voice toward her child like no other in the world. It's just, I don't know how to describe the way it transforms a woman to have a baby. It's amazing. And that was in this mother's face and in her eyes. So the little girl is maybe about a year old or somewhere in that range, just learning to talk. Couldn't say very much yet. And when we were getting off the plane, she started waving. And she could say, hi. And she could say, bye. And the lady sitting in the seat a couple over from me waved back to her. Well, that's nice once. But that little child waved and waved and waved, and everybody said hi to her. But every time somebody say hi, she'd laugh some more. And her mother never got tired of that. She thought that was the sweetest thing that anybody could ever do. Now, if that had been somebody else's child, she might not have felt that way. But I don't know how to put it in words. There was a look on that mother's face. It's almost, the child wasn't naughty. Don't misunderstand me. That's not what I mean. But it's like that she felt this child could do no wrong. Probably at that age, she just about couldn't do any wrong. Her mother rejoiced in her. And I thought to myself, that is what that sailor is trying to protect. That's the glue of life. That is what makes life worth it. It's not the money. And it's not the position. It's the relationships that we have with each other that make life worth living. The golden moments that we treasure when we stand around someone's casket for the last time are those kind of things. Well, while I was waiting for the flight in Baltimore, I was in a seat, three or four people in the seat there beside me like they are in the waiting areas in airport. And there was a little boy, about 9 years old, and his six-year-old sister was there. They'd been sitting there a couple hours, and they were pretty bored. And so I thought I'd have some fun. I started talking to him. Where are you going? Go see my mother. Daddy's sitting there with him. So where do you live? I said, I live in Virginia. I said, well, where's your mother? So my mother's in Tennessee. Go see my mother. Dad's sitting there doing something on his cell phone the whole time, and he never seemed to do anything. What are you going to do when you get to your mother's house? Well, he said, I want a mini bike for Christmas. And I get a mini bike, I'm going to ride it and let my friends ride it. And his little sister she'd made up a song, and she couldn't wait for him to stop talking about his mini bike. She interrupted and stepped up there and kind of, wait, I want you to hear my song. And she started singing, and he's still talking. And kept on with his song. We made him quit for a little bit and listened to her song. She made up a pretty good song about Christmas. Dad never looked up from his cell phone the whole time. And I couldn't help it. I thought to myself, well, you know, that too, that's what that sailor is trying to protect. But we do it to ourselves. You know, we do it to ourselves. And I don't like that. There wasn't anything I could say. What would you say, little boy and little girl? I couldn't tell them what I wanted to. But I wish they didn't have a dad living in Virginia and a mother living in Tennessee and not able to. Didn't really look happy with either one of them. They looked like they had much happy anticipation of going to see their mother. The most there was to talk about was the presents, and as I listened to what they had to say, I realized that nobody in that relationship's got enough money to give this little boy a mini bike. If he got it there, he wouldn't have any way to get it home. He can't get it on the airplane. Half the things that he was wishing for are going to be just in his mind, fantasy, disappointment. There's too much of that in the world, folks. Now, the scripture that I read to you reads this way. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. You know that I'm a man who spent my life trying to prevent that kind of thing and fostering the values that hold people together. This time of the year is one of the times when we are most able to take advantage of the weapons that are not carnal. And I think of it this way. In my heart, I'm not really an advocate, especially of the commercialism that goes around the Christmas season. But I am an advocate, a wholehearted advocate, of building the bonds that hold families together. Now, I think of it this way. I remember reading a story about during the Civil War. Major battle was shaping up. I guess people were able to tell when those things were about to happen. And like in all wars, people were inspired by the great causes that lay at stake. This happened to be a story from the Union side, so these boys are fired up with the idea of preserving the Union and freeing the slaves, keeping the country whole, ready to face great hardships and endure wounds and gunfire and perhaps even death. And those are noble causes. And they are important. But there are always other people there who are prepared to take advantage of the situation. So there was this one gentleman who had a bunch of coffins made up in advance, and he had them lined up in a row there, and he's selling them to the soldiers. They're going off to battle because, you know, the North and South are fighting each other, and somebody's going to win, but somebody else is going to get rich out of this deal, and it might as well be me. That's what he's thinking. When they're going to kill each other, somebody's going to bury them, and it's going to cost something to get them in the casket, so I might as well be the one to make the money. And so he had a sign played up there. So-and-so's undertaker service, special attention paid to deceased soldiers. And so that's a little bit the way I feel about the Christmas season. The world takes it ways that I don't understand. 2 or 3 years ago, I was in Chicago, in the airport there, which is a commercial airport. It's paid for by the government, so they have to follow government rules. And it had a sign. Of all things, it had a sign in the airport that said, we're playing Christmas songs. We're not playing Christmas carols. I don't have the wording of it right, but I guess they could play jingle bells, but they couldn't play anything that had a name of Jesus in it. So they're in a fight about it. Some silly people out in Oregon, government officials, had a Christmas tree put up in a public place somewhere, so a judge or officials or somebody made a ruling, if you're going to put up a Christmas tree, you got to put other religious symbols around it. Something from the Star of David, maybe for the Jews, and something from Islam, and Buddha, and whoever else. And I thought to myself, how silly can you be? Who ever made a Christmas tree the symbol of Christianity? And it's not a religious symbol, but they'll fight over it. And two or three days ago, government officials from the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, walked into a little bank in Perkins, Oklahoma, and told the folks, if you got a nativity scene out here, you got to take it down, because this is federal money that's coming into it, and people comment about things like that. And of course, that created a big fuss about it. So I feel a little bit like that undertaker. I look at them just going through all of these, this mess they get into in the airport in Providence. I was listening to the music coming over the speakers, and they were playing Christian, the little drummer boy, and things like that. And I thought, I wonder how you get away with that. But what I really thought was, the world's designated it, and I don't object to it, a special time for family. I intend to take advantage of it. I want to use every weapon at my disposal to bring my family just as close together as I can, because I'm afraid of what's out there. It can do terrible damage. And those who are going to go away, I want them to have to go away like the prodigal son did. He's breaking some traditions, memories. I have some. The way my family was at Christmas time, they marked me for life. I'll never forget it. We lived isolated. And we had our practices that we carried out. I remember being in the mixed chorus in the Boys Glee Club, singing Christmas songs. We put on a Christmas play every year in the school, and I get to sing with the folks. I remember that. And I remember we'd have a little Christmas at school. We'd all give little presents to each other. That was just a preliminary. It was like everything was building up to a crisis, which it does in a child's mind. And my parents would take us to a nearby town. Didn't go there all that often, but I remember very well where I grew up. There'd be snow on the ground every year. I remember snow falling, and give us each one $10, a little bit of money, five in the family. Give us each some money and say, now you're to shop. Don't spend any of this on yourself. You're to shop for each one of that. You got four children to buy for, and mom and dad, if you want to. And you got all afternoon. People weren't afraid of one another in those days, and they'd turn us loose on the town. And we'd make little lists and give them to each other. Us children would. My family moved to Guthrie when I was 16, and I left home shortly after. And I've wondered sometimes if my younger brother and sisters had those same kind of experiences. And I wonder what my parents thought of me and the grown-ups looking at me, because I was just a freckle-faced boy with the ears that stick out from the side of his head and wear thick-rimmed glasses. And you can't tell people what you're really feeling. And I look at our young people sometimes and I wonder if we're marking them as deep as I got marked. And once in a while I see a little indicator. And it makes me so glad. Just some indication that these young people, I don't suppose anybody knew how much that all meant to me at the time. And I wonder if some of these young people, we don't really realize how much we're marking them, but I hope we are. I hope we are. I hope when we take a Sunday evening and go out and sing our Christmas carols, and then come back here and do something that means something to them and carries a memory. So that if in the future the old devil starts to work on them with the kind of things that hurt so badly, this will be a barrier. These are our weapons. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they're mighty. I remember very well a little package laying in there with all the others. A mother practice in our family was we didn't open any presents until Christmas Eve. Some folks do Christmas morning, but ours is Christmas Eve. And we didn't open any of them until then. Roberta's family's different. They want to open a present every day. And that's part of the fun of it. Took me a while to adjust that. I was breaking the rules. I didn't do that. But now I know that was their practice. That's part of the fun to them. And she buys presents just for that. So they have one every day to the big finale. Anyway, I was looking at the ones that were laid out there and I found a little one that had my name on it. Mother wouldn't let us touch it. She wouldn't let us shake it, but she turned her head and I snuck up there and touched it anyway. And she turned around and caught me and I bumped it and dropped it. It wasn't very big. And I said, well, it couldn't be very much. Little package cube, maybe 3 inches cube, something like that. And she said, and I've never forgotten it. She said, son, sometimes some of the best things come in little packages. And when the time came and I opened it up, it was a wristwatch. And it was one that I'd been wanting a long time. And I could have easily broken it by what I was doing. Those are the traditions. They mean something to me. God knows we are humans. He created us that way. And our bonds are in the spirit. But there's also some emotional passion that we build with one another. So the world celebrates this time. I didn't have anything to do with designating this to be the time of Christmas, but I intend to take the fullest possible advantage of it to reach those that I love every way I can and build every bond with them that I can during this kind of time. And they recommend it to us. We take advantage of what the world has set in place because it is a sentimental time. My niece, I sent her a message, text message. Said, it is your duty this year to make divinity for the family. Family gathering was last Saturday, yesterday. Said, and also it's to have nuts and maraschino cherries in it. And she sent me a message back and said, what's divinity? Is it the same as Martha Washington candy? I said, no, something different. I sent her a recipe that I found. And she sent me a message back. And she had tried to make some, and she had laid it out on a cookie sheet, and it looked like cookies, only white ones at all, and she sent me a picture back of it. And she said, I don't think this is what divinity is supposed to look like, which is not. It was a failure on her part. I couldn't be there because I was in Rhode Island. But can I tell you what I was thinking? I really don't care about the divinity. But my niece is not married. She's in her 30s now, I guess. And I wonder what's going to happen to her when her mother is gone. You know, the failed divinity leaves a memory. It isn't really the sweetness of the candy. It's the love. Yes. It's the way we connect with one another that makes us what we are. The difference, and that's what I want for her. With me. And with the rest of the family. Family is one of the greatest things we've got in this world to give us a reason to live. We need each other, folks. And I know worship service is important. I know it is. Worship service is going to go on 52 weeks a year. In our congregation, we meet regularly, 3 times every week. We also have revival meetings and camp meetings locally and at a distance that we travel to. All of that's important. It can be that we can afford, each one of us, to miss a worship service sometimes to touch our family. I believe in going to family reunions. And I believe in spending some time with family at Christmas, not advocating dismissing the service. I'm advocating just simply that when your family needs you, not every Sunday, once in a while, build some traditions with them. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they're mighty. They have weight. Well, I think about that prodigal. He got off in a foreign land and he got hungry. There's more than one kind of hunger, folks. There's a hunger to hear happy voice. Have you heard that song? I think Bing Crosby made it famous. There's no place like home for the holidays. Somebody's headed for Pennsylvania and some homemade pumpkin pie. Somebody else is headed for California to see mom and dad there. And another one says, I'll be home for Christmas. You can count on me, if only in my dreams. And I thought that one was kind of sad. Because, you know, my mother and father are gone now. They gave us something that was very valuable to us at the time. I remember all that. We'd string popcorn, make strands of popcorn and use it to decorate in the house. And that's all gone now. Nobody does that anymore. Times change. Life changes. People get married and they have families and they have to build their own traditions. You have to do it. And it's a good thing to do. Draw those you love close to you. Think of ways to touch their hearts, to make your love special to them. Because there's a lot of things out there to tear it down. The old devil's hard on families and homes. We live in a world adrift. The Lord wants us to take advantage of the opportunities that come our way to build closeness. To build closeness. Isn't it something how scent can so awaken our memories? And just, we'd gather at my parents' house after we were all grown, and the ladies would be in the kitchen doing the things that they do. Really didn't pay much attention to them because we boys had our tradition. We'd get in the street in front of their house and we'd play football. And we'd all go into Christmas dinner with our knees skinned and our elbows skinned and arguing about who bound to miss touchdowns and who almost caught what pass and whose fault it was that overthrew somebody or knocked somebody down or something. I remember my dad getting out and playing with us when he's way too old to do it anymore. He said, I can't run. He said, well, you just walk. And you can be the quarterback, and we won't let anybody touch you. You just throw the ball. And he said, I can't throw it very far. And we said, our field's not very big. And my mother would get out and play football with us. And she wouldn't even try to run. I'd run up there to get her, and she'd say, boy, you wouldn't hurt your poor old mama, would you? And, of course, you know, I miss that. You understand what I'm talking about? Yes. Taking advantage of the occasion, yes, to build the bonds with each other. So we had these little boys playing with us. We kind of teased them. And sometimes we ran over them. But they're men now. And you know what they talk about? Sure you do. Sure you do. So, you know what they say to me? They say, you're not as big as we thought you were. Good. You're taking your place in the world of men now. There's another little boy coming along. He needs you too. Teach him that you can skin your knees and not cry. Teach him that when the time comes, you stop what you're doing and get together with your family. Because it goes so fast. And it means so much. Thank you for the courtesy of your attention this morning. We want to take advantage of every weapon that the Lord puts at our disposal to do everything we can to help those we love and those we don't know make heaven their home. Amen.